Translation: The Lord is the reservoir of all pleasure. His auspicious presence is meant for everyone's benediction, and his affectionate smiling and glancing touch the core of the heart. Okay? The Lord's beautiful bodily color is blacker, and his broad chest is the resting place of the goddess of fortune, who glorifies the entire spiritual world. Yeah, that's what she does. The summit of all heavenly planets. Thus it appeared that the Lord was personally spreading the beauty and good fortune of the spiritual world. Our perspective here, of course, is that the Kumaras have come to the gate of Vaikuntha. And, of course, for the week we've had so much, you know, perspective on this. And now, finally, Lord Vishnu himself has heard the news. He's come out to the gate here with Lakshmi. And now there's a description of his appearance, his features. First, he's a reservoir of all pleasure, okay? His auspicious presence, which is full of pleasure, is meant for everyone's benediction. You know? And, of course, what is pleasure? Pleasure is being able to contribute, right? And do something that people appreciate. Wow, thanks. We really needed that. If you hadn't come, wow. Yeah. So he's giving pleasure to everybody by creating opportunities for them to do something practical. And his affectionate smiling and glancing touch the core of the heart. Affectionate smiling and glancing touch the core of the heart. Okay. So there he is, the reservoir of all pleasure, touching people's cores of their hearts with a smiling and glancing. Won't you do this? Won't you do that? The Lord's beautiful bodily color is blackish, and his broad chest is a resting place of the goddess of fortune. Well, who is this goddess of fortune? Yeah? Yeah. She glorifies, right? It's glorious, but she glorifies it. Glorifies the entire spiritual world. Yeah? Who? Yeah. At the summit of all heavenly planets. Thus it appeared that the Lord was personally spreading the beauty and good fortune of the spiritual world. Wow. Nice place. Maybe a little bit of it will be spread into our lives today. Maybe half of this class. Our lives will be eternally different. Okay. So there's one more verse that we can just toss in just tonight, maybe to refresh it or try and memorize it. We're on 3:15:39, but 3:15:43 is maybe like one of the most principal verses in this whole chapter. If you've got it there, if you can look it up, 3:15:43, or if you can see it, then we can all kind of chant it together. Tasyaravinda-nayanasya-padaravinda Kinjalaka-mishra-tulasi-makaranda-vayu Antargata-svavivarena-chakaratesham Shankshohubhamaksharajusamapichitvatanvo. When the breeze carrying the aroma of tulasi leaves from the toes of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead entered the nostrils of those sages, they experienced a change both in body and in mind. Body and mind. Even though they were attached to the impersonal Brahman understanding. Now, so, of course, this is cited so much. You know, maybe those who have the facility can memorize this verse if you haven't already. Kinjalka Mishra Makaranda Vayu. Yeah, it's being carried into their nostrils. So they went, powerful verse. They went from being impersonalists. And yesterday, Giri Govardhanji was giving nice description of Shanta Ras and how it's, some ways, an impersonal perspective. But I might say it's like you're having trouble in your kingdom. You know, the Nazis are taking over. So you flee, you know, Germany and come to America, you know. But as soon as you land, you see so many things are going on like this and that. And you see, my goodness, there must be a good king. There must be a good king in America. So this is Brahman effulgence, Brahman realization. It's like being in the kingdom of God, you know. And then Paramatma is like, you know, seeing the president in different, the king in different committee meetings and talking with them in this official fashion during them about building a new dam in the country or something, you know. So his personal features are there, the relationships are there. And then finally, after one meeting, before it finishes off, he says, you know, Gupta, your name is a little familiar. Do you have an aunt named so-and-so? And you say, well, yeah, she's my mother's sister. You say, well, hey, we're cousins. You got a moment? Come, have a little lunch with me. We can talk about this, you know. So Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, you know, different realizations. And so the Paramatma realization in the heart, again, is somewhere in between there. And you actually can see the features, maybe like being on Vishnu's committee, you know. Yeah. Okay, now this purport goes on for the next 10,000 years. So we'll try and discuss it a little bit to our in infinitesimal capacity. When the Lord came, he was pleased with everyone. Okay. Therefore, it is stated here, Krishna Prasada Sumukam. Krishna Prasada Sumukam. The Lord knew that even the offensive doormen, were his pure devotees. Although by chance they committed an offense at the feet of other devotees. So this word chance is such an interesting word. I've heard Bertram Russell, the Nobel laureate guy there, said that the concept of chance is the most important concept in the 20th century because nobody has the slightest idea why it happens, what it is, what it means. And of course, all of evolutionary theory, if you take out the word chance or you take the word random event out of science, you've got nothing. So to examine the concept will take us right back to this point of neti-neti, you know. A chance event or a random event is an event the cause of which cannot be detected like that. So that means it was caused by, not by this, not by that, not by this, not by that, not by that, not by those, not by him, not, neti-neti. It's a basic philosophical basis of this whole Western concept is this simple concept of neti-neti. If you look at the etymology of the word, it comes from, I think, the old Latin, or whatever, somewhere. It goes back there to, what's it called? Colloquial Latin to Old Latin. It means something like choda, which means to fall. You know, you might say the apple chanced Sir Isaac Newton's head. The apple chanced, you know, to fall out. That's all it means. There's no explanation about anything else. You know, and also it's kind of like also in terms of choda, to fall down, to die like that. Okay, so his pure devotees, although by chance they committed an offense at the feet of other devotees. So maybe the whole, keeping a little bit of a secret here why it actually happened. To commit an offense against a devotee is very dangerous in devotional service. Lord Chaitanya therefore said that if an offense to a devotee is just like a mad elephant running loose. That's 5 tons of elephants on the loose there. When a mad elephant enters a garden, it tramples all the plants. Like that. Now, of course, this is offense even by chance. Yeah. Similarly, an offense unto the feet of a pure devotee murders one's position in devotional service. On the part of the Lord, there was no offended mood because he does not accept any offense created by his sincere devotee. But a devotee should be very cautious of committing offenses at the feet of another devotee. The Lord being equal to all and being especially inclined to his devotee looked as mercifully at the offenders as at the offended. This attitude of the Lord was due to his unlimited quantity of transcendental qualities. So how could he be so merciful? Because he has an unlimited quantity of transcendental qualities. He can see the good and bad things. He can see the good outcome of things. He can see the, you know, the the cause behind it actually was good, and left, right, top, bottom, good before me, good behind me, good above me, good within the hearts of everybody. His cheerful attitude towards the devotees, his cheerful attitude towards the devotees. Hey, mate, looks like you got cursed here, huh? It's going to have some fun, huh? His cheerful attitude towards the devotees was so pleasing, and heart-touching that his very smile was attractive to them. So again, Gary Govardhan yesterday was kind of setting the mood for this, that always is going on, and the sages are, were looking aghast in the picture, and the Kumaras are looking, like a little angry or whatever. But when Vishnu comes out, the whole thing just becomes jolly, jolly. Yeah. So from his point of view, there's no problem with the material world. If God is all good, then why is there evil? Because the evil is also good. One second here. My machine has decided to turn off. I always remember this when Prabhupada came to San Francisco. We got off the airplane. He came into the temple room in Berkeley. And I was coming back from the bank, and I saw the motorcade arriving, so I ran back. And then Prabhupada said, the pilot got off, came back and sat, and came back and talked to me. And of course, he mentioned many, many years later, only about 7 years ago, we actually saw a devotee was sitting in the office seat filming this. And the pilot was kind of a big, robust guy, and he was smiling and standing like facing Prabhupada's seat, and Prabhupada had an aisle seat, And Prabhupada was smiling and making his motions and stuff, And the pilot asked me, Swamiji, if God is all good, why is there evil? And so Prabhupada said, I explained it like this, so you tell me if I explained it properly or not. And Prabhupada said, from the point of view of the sun, everything is illuminated. It's all there's no ignorance, there's nothing to fear, that's all illuminated. And from the point of view of the sun, everything is illuminated. The sun cannot see darkness. You can imagine the sun trying to lift up a piece of paper and look behind it, or look behind the door and try to see shadow. So in some way, according to that analogy, that Krishna cannot know what is evil. So why not expand himself to produce something we'll be able to experience it? It's a very interesting perspective. So from God's point of view, the whole thing is like a little kid's party with the kids playing and dressing up and getting caught up in all these different things like that, which are quite amusing and quite humorous. How they carry on being Aunt Sally and Uncle Bobby and Mommy and Daddy and all this kind of stuff. And the policeman, So from the point of view of Krishna, the whole thing is actually a cheerful, cheerful mess. And he's, of course, playing with the kids and letting them, experience it in their own way, and improve their service ability too. Why not? Krishna's the supreme enjoyer. So the material world has to be enjoyable. And also there's opportunity for us to advance in our service here. Why not? It's my speculation. Okay, so he was cheerful when he came out, That attraction of his smile was glorious, not only for the higher planets of this material world, but beyond, for the spiritual world also. Atmaramas Chamunayo Nirgranta Apiarukrame Kurvantiya Hoitakim Bhaktim Itambhuto Ganoharahe. He has so many qualities that even the Atmaramas are attracted to serving him. We had a Sankirtan leader in Berkeley, Jivadas. Prabhupada originally gave him the name of a woman, Janaki Pampanga or something. It was in the letter, because his name was Jamie. So they said, Prabhupada, he's a man. He sent the name back, Jivadas. Then later on, he was in prison before he became a devotee. He was a big-time robber, It was like Jimmy Cagney, not very big, but real muscular, very powerful guy, So he told us one time, for example, he pulled off the freeway with his friend, pulled into a gas station. The gas station attendant came out. Then he went around the back with a guy starting to pump the gas in and pulled a shotgun out, stuck it in the guy's face and said, this is a robbery, give me all your money. Right at that moment, a highway patrol car pulled off with two highway patrol officers in it to get gas. So they saw the scene with this guy standing there with his friend sticking a shotgun in the gas tin as the patient's face. And Jivadas saw them, you know, think fast. And he just kind of tossed the shotgun to the gas station attendant, who grabbed it. And he kind of put his arm around and laughed and said, just joking. Wanted to see if it was there, you know, it's not loaded. And then the gas station kid said, well, so you sure scared me, you know, blah, 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 you know. So the gas station, the high patrol officers kind of saw this and got their gas and pulled off. Then Jiva took the guy's shotgun back and robbed the guy. So, what do you do when you join ISKCON? You become the Sankirtan leader. Yeah. And then after that, you become the head of the Mother's Party. Yeah. Everything you want, you can get in ISKCON. Anyway, so... But he had this whole spirit to him, exactly like this. He would just like... You know, he was like a real natural gang leader. You know, he would get you so enthusiastic. Even myself, the most fatherless guy from this on earth, I was just like out there also like going to go be a rascal and, you know, and fool these guys and get that from them and cheat them, get the books out and, you know, so much fun, you know. So this is the Lord's smile and his attractive nature are glorious. Not only does he attract people to follow him and join his gang in the Swarga, but also in Vaikuntha, people want to join his gang. Generally, a human being has no idea of what the constitutional position is in the higher material planets, which are far better constituted in regard to all paraphernalia. Yet, the Vaikuntha planet is so pleasing and so celestial, that it is compared to the middle jewel or locket in a necklace of jewels like that. And we tried to find that. We couldn't find any good example on the internet, so we settled for a beautiful golden vase with a nice golden rose on top, if you can see the picture like that. You know? And of course, that's Krishna. By himself, he doesn't look so, attractive. But when he's surrounded by his pleasure potency, by his potencies, especially his pleasure potency, then he looks very attractive like that and so on. You know? So it's, what is it? It's not unwarranted to actually try to understand the higher planetary systems, to try and understand the moon through the branches of the trees. Because we hear these stories and they sound maybe kind of like, what's the word? If we're not in the mode of goodness, it just maybe like a overloading, you know, display of energy. His face is like this. The walls are like this. This is like that. That's like this. You know? Yeah. So, but if we, as more if we get in the mode of goodness, you know, just become more brahminical, you know, then these things can actually stimulate us. You heard one time Prabhupada came out of a feast in India, and I organized that one Maharaja or something, and he asked the devotees, what did you think of the feast? And devotees were describing things, and Prabhupada laughed. He said, you Westerners have senses like horses. All you can taste is four things: sweet, salty, sour, and burned. But once you go beyond that, there's so many subtle, you know, spices and the combination of these things. You know, sweet rice with black pepper and a little camphor. Yeah. But of course, you have to have a very sensitive body to appreciate these things. Sensitive prana, you know, and maybe to some degree we can appreciate them. And then we're motivated if we understand. One time again, I was at the heading from Berkeley to Oakland, California. I stopped at the light, and the most beautiful woman I have ever seen in my life got out of the car, some kind of Mercedes Benz or something, you know, maybe about like 33 or something, 35. So she looked like a little, like, you know, aristocratic in the sense of higher thing, and very well dressed and so forth, so on. You know? And I was actually quite happy, because when I saw her, my, you know, deep reaction, my automatic reaction below my level of control there was, if she's that beautiful, then Krishna must be really something. Yeah. So that's what we get if we begin to experience these things in this world. You know, I was always amazed by 747s. You know, they're quite amazing to me, these big airplanes like that. You know? And I was thinking, this is Maya. You know? But then one time I heard Prabhupada talking about 747. And he says, and the pilot pushes one button, and the whole thing flies in the sky. You know? And so I could see he was really relishing it. You know? So again, all right, if there's nothing wrong with relishing these things, because they'll stimulate us into to do the austerities necessary to go beyond, beyond the vibhuti-mat sattvas, you know, among animals I am the lion, among fish I am the shark, you know. So these are real. They give us some real stimulation to actually do the austerities, to do nirjalakadasi, you know, to try and participate in the spiritual master's movement, you know, to as austerity, you know. And then we can actually appreciate these higher things, and of course they wake up eternally, wake up our nature. Okay, going on here. In this verse, the words spriyaniya dhamma, spriyaniya dhamma, indicate that the Lord is the reservoir of all pleasure because he has all the transcendental qualities. Although only some of these are aspired for by persons who hanker after the pleasure of merging in the impersonal Brahman, there are other aspirants who want to associate with the Lord personally as his servants. For those who want to merge into the Brahman, they want eternality, omnipresence, you know, these kind of qualities like that and so on, relief from stress, suffering. But Krishna has other qualities which stimulate us, you know, in a service relationship. And some aspire to have those in his service, to experience them. The Lord is so kind that he gives shelter to everyone, both impersonalists and devotees. He gives a shelter to the impersonalists in his impersonal Brahman effulgence, whereas he gives shelter to the devotees in his personal abodes known as the Vaikuntha Lokas, whereas he gives shelter to the devotees in his personal abodes known as the Vaikuntha Lokas. He is especially inclined to his devotee. He is especially inclined to his devotee. Yeah. He touches the core of the hearts of the devotee simply by smiling and glancing over them. So spiritual world, not such a complicated place. Singing, dancing, feasting, and smiling. Yeah, glances. But also things are needed. Yeah, again. Yeah. And we're born with specific, created with specific, individual, unique qualities which nobody else has. You know, nobody. So why be envious of anybody else, and why be afraid of anybody taking away your service? You know, develop it. Develop your character. And then we can see that Vaikuntha, something is missing. Something is missing in the choir. Something is missing in the paraphernalia, the furniture, like that. And we find in Vaikuntha all the things are necessary. There's a table saw. You know, there's, what do you call it, goggles. I used to do some carpentry work one time, cabinet work with an artist, I maybe mentioned it, Gunnar Lind. And table saw, you can do so many interesting things, you know, and then, you know, staining the woods and stuff like that, and produce such beautiful, you know, beautiful things that actually work and stimulate personal relationships. So probably there's plenty of room, unlimited room for more carpenters in Vaikuntha, unlimited room for more metallurgists, unlimited room for more jewelers. You know, the thing is just getting started. You know, yes. And here we go again. The Lord is always served in the Vaikuntha Loka by many hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Lakshmi Sahasra Shatasam Brahma Sevyamam. Brahma Samhita 529. This is 539 today. In this material world, one is glorified if he is favored even a pinch by the goddess of fortune. So we can simply imagine how glorified is the kingdom of God in the spiritual world. Wow, we can imagine. Where many hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune engage in the direct service of the Lord. Yeah. So we looked for, I thought what we looked for, I think we looked for Goddess of Fortune on the internet, and that came back with all these like nasty pictures from bars and gambling casinos, you know, different kinds of weird people. That, I don't know how we did it. Maybe we kept looking here. Because what we got here was a very nice picture. It shows like a Gandharva-type lady with wings and a cornucopia with like, you know, golden coins just spilling over like that. What we did here. Yeah. So, yeah, nice. Kind of matches the description of, and also has the, this Goddess of Fortune doesn't have ornaments, you know, other than bodily features and things like that. So it's kind of like the opulence of Goloka, where people's bodily features surpass the quality of jewels and so on. Okay. They engage in direct service. Another feature of this verse, wow, is that it openly declares where the Vaikuntha Lokas are situated. They are situated as the summit of all heavenly planets. The summit, Tunga, the summit of all heavenly planets, which are above the sun globe, at the upper limit of the universe, and are known as Satya Loka or Brahma Loka. They are situated at the summit of all heavenly planets, known as Satya Loka or Brahma Loka. Now, the spiritual world is situated beyond the universe. Therefore, it is stated here that the spiritual world, Vaikuntha Loka, is the summit of all planetary systems. Because it mentions Swa. Let me clarify that a little bit. As I remember in the Mahabharata, it's also presented like that. Then when Yudhisthira was going to Swarga, okay, you go to Swarga. So when you look up at Swarga from the earth, you see, okay, yeah, there's Vaikuntha, there's Goloka, that's all a part of Swarga. But when you actually get there, you look up, you see, well, oh no, actually, this Vaikuntha and Goloka are above Swarga. And when you go to Vaikuntha, you see, oh wow, actually, Goloka's above, you know. So from a perspective, it all looks like, you know, all looks like it's all a part of Swarga, you know. So it's kind of the whole verse here. It's a very, of course, the one verse in the whole series. And let me see here. Let's go back to the Sanskrit, so the translation. Okay, shift F5. There we go. The Lord is the reservoir of all pleasure. His auspicious presence, is meant for everyone's benediction, and his affectionate smiling and glancing touch the core of the heart. The Lord's beautiful bodily color is blackish, and his broad chest is the resting place of the Goddess of Fortune, who glorifies the entire spiritual world, the summit of all heavenly planets. Thus it appeared that the Lord was personally spreading the beauty and good fortune of the spiritual world. So, Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, any comments? Any comments or maybe some questions? I don't know. Yeah, like that. Complaints? Criticism. It's better to have a wise man.
Just one second.
Okay.
I have unmuted everybody. If anyone has anything they'd like to add, questions, comments, or catch up.
Yes. Hello. Hare Krishna.
Hi Krishna. I have a question. Let's see. I put it in chat. But in the beginning, you were saying, Prabhupada's purport by chance. Prabhupada said by chance that Jai and Vijay committed this offense, but we always hear that not a blade of grass moves without the permission of Krishna, so how could this offense been made by Jai and Vijay been made by chance?
Yeah, that's what I was also shocked by that, you know, so I was looking at a little bit of the definition of chance. Prabhupada uses other places too. There's a whole thing also of who's in control. Several places in Chaitanya Charitamrita, for example, one place it says that Krishna's devotee and devotional service. You know, Krishna's devotee and devotional service. They all come together and dance, and nobody can tell who's quite who's in control. like that.
Oh.
Sometimes Purnamasi is saying, no, it should go like this. Sometimes the gopis are saying, no, you should do this. Sometimes Krishna is saying, what's going on, like that. So, and also, too, I describe that the gopis are full of innumerable, inconceivable emotional states that even they can't predict what's going to happen. So Krishna doesn't. There's a competition between Krishna's knowledge potency and his creative potency. He figures everything out, what the gopis are going to do, makes a whole plan, and then they come along and just, come out with something which astounds him. So from one perspective, he knows what's happening, everything else. And also, too, he may say, in the mode of goodness, he say, okay, I'm going to give you choices, And he doesn't know what we're going to do, because now we're in the mode of goodness and we're not being compelled so much. So we may choose this material thing or that material thing, But we're choosing things and we're taking care of our toys properly. So, then maybe we'll get a puppy or a kitty cat for Christmas because we were taking care of our toys properly, like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why.
That's a really helpful answer. That's really neat. makes sense.
I hope you get a kitty cat for Christmas.
Oh, no, thanks. I'm allergic to them.
Oh, how about a sanitized kitty cat? A non-allergic kitty cat.
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for a wonderful class. That's really, really wonderful. Great. Thank you.
Oh, Srila Prabhupada. Wow. I had a car one time I had to push. 1992 Oldsmobile. Okay.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. It took me a minute to unmute. Really, really enjoyed your class. It was entertaining, and I like to be entertained during class. And I really appreciated your reaction to the beautiful girl. Your gut reaction wasn't something you couldn't control. It was, wow, Krishna must be even more beautiful. And I'm so happy for you that you had that happened to you. Because it really, it can happen to anyone now, right?
Have you ever seen a very handsome young man with a big mustache and broad shoulders, and you thought, my goodness, this is the most beautiful man I ever saw? What was your reaction? Did it ever happen to you?
I really don't like mustaches, but usually I try to block that kind of thing out. I haven't had the reaction of equating them to Krishna, except I saw a picture of Paramahamsa Yogananda back before I was a devotee, and I looked at him and I thought, wow, he is so beautiful. I wonder if God looks like that.
Yeah, I guess because we're not doing it. This is from previous lifetimes. So I think right from the very beginning, I think most of us, as soon as we hear about God, it makes sense, even though we're very small and you get the basic conception there. Vaisheshika was telling one story about he was on. We're doing this Bhakti Baba thing, so he's supposed to be teaching classes. He hasn't done that, so I got him into doing one master's class for each of the 4 years. He's on the fourth canto now. He just finished that off. It's recorded there in ISKCON, Silicon Valley. What I asked him to do is preaching strategies in the Bhagavatam. It's very nice. He's going through and picking out the different strategies that different people adopt. And I forgot one thing he was talking about was, when you're on Sankirtan, so many people will insult you and everything else, and what kind of strategy you have to have in terms of that. That aspect of preaching, But he said one time, because he always very much remembered what Prabhupada said, that Saraswati, she said, she would tell people, do you know Krishna? And they would say, who is he? He said, Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada said, this is perfect, So he was always very impressed with that, how simple it was, and it was kind of like a thing for him when he was going out distributing books, So he said one time he was in the airport, and there was a young girl, like a college co-ed or something, and he approached her and started talking about Prabhupada's books. And she said, yeah, I know about these books. My parents taught me about them. And she said, oh, you thought some girl who'd like gone to college, like this and that, you know, and your parents would have, you know, knew about books. He started asking, see, I asked her, who are your parents? He said, oh, Malati and Shyamasundar. He was shocked because he was standing right in front of, you know, Saraswati. He said, you're Saraswati. He said, yeah, I'm Saraswati, you know, so on. So all these things are going on that any moment we can be shocked and realize that actually we're not in control of this world. And that it's nice because then we see what's happening. And actually all this hearing and chanting, it pays off, you know. And a girl sees, usually girls are attracted, they have their studies, you know, to men's broad shoulders. Okay, some guy with broad shoulders, whatever. You think, you remember Krishna and how his physical body and his deep chest and everything else, just deeply. And that's the advantage of hearing these descriptions and meditating on them, is that then the world around us can stimulate us, but only take us to higher things.
Jai. So that brings me to the next question. Using your analogy of the sun can't see any darkness, no shadow, does that mean that there's no such thing as evil in the world?
Again, this is Prabhupada's answer, that he gave that answer. I was personally there when he told us what he told the pilot. And he said, it's like this. You know, from God's point of view, there's nothing but light. So from Krishna's direct point of view, everything is light. Then he said that as long as we face the sun, we also only see light. Right? Yeah. And he said, but when we turn away from the sun, we see our enormous shadow. So how big is our shadow? It's tiny. Tiny. But from our point of view, it's so, so big, you know. So that was Prabhupada's point, that from Krishna's point of view, and in Krishna's book also, I remember, Prabhupada says that from our point of view, and from Krishna's point of view, these are all just pastimes and play, you know. But from our point of view, they are a tangible reality. You know? So it makes more interesting this question about evil and so on, because from Krishna's point of view, you see, the material world is evil. The material world is bad. But the material world is also good. There actually is neither evil nor good in the material world. There's only evil good, or good evil. And Socrates is the same thing. You know, it's a two-headed god. As soon as happiness shows up, there's evil. As soon as evil shows up, there's happiness. So material nature is beating you. You can be sure that a little bit she's going to be rewarding you. And if she's rewarding you, you can be sure of you, and she's going to start beating you.
Oh, you know? I get it now. Yeah. It's like in the Tao Te Ching, you can only know what short is if you know what long is, kind of thing.
Exactly.
I
get it. As soon as you turn away from Krishna, there's nothing. You know, but Krishna is ever expanding, in evil and goodness. You know, so somehow or other, he expands himself as a living entity to if he wants to have a brawl, a fight in a bar, you can't do that in Goloka. Can't go breaking, smashing things up, and you know, throwing people across the room, and you know, kung fu kicks to the stomach. And hello. So, but everybody knows how much fun this is. Yeah. So, okay, he creates the material world, and creates, and somehow or other, the jivas are involved with this, where they're born with this they're kind of born with the possibility of something he can't do. You might say, of course, it is him. Yeah. Complicated question. Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. Hey, Balabhadra.
I have a question.
Okay. Yes, sir.
In the purport, Srila Prabhupada is making the point that one should be so careful about making offenses to the feet of devotees, because it can murder your devotional attitude. So, does that count for small devotees, big devotees, in between devotees, or just whatever a pure devotee is?
Because
the license is, the attitude is, for most of us, neophyte devotees, is, oh, well, you know, it's for advanced devotees, but for rank and file devotees on my level or below, then it's not so serious to offend them.
Well, I would say to some degree, we haven't got any devotion to people to murder. at this point. If you want, to take it that way, because describing the devotional creeper is growing, right? You know, and first it's a sprout, and then you know somebody comes and eats it. Then it's a sapling, and somebody comes over and steps on it. And you know, it's at different levels, and at different levels we have to protect it at different levels from different things. You know? And so if we commit offense to a devotee, you know. And, of course, there are different levels of devotees. So we may commit an offense to a mixed devotee, and half of his offensive reaction is nothing more than material reaction. So there's nothing but involvement other than a material reaction. But if he's a pure devotee, then the offense is a pure offense. And it depends, of course, on the degree of what we're doing and so forth, the intentionality, everything else. Jai and Vijay were protected. They always remembered Krishna. They never forgot Krishna. Like that. So I would say it's a complicated question, but our creeper is growing, and maybe it gets to the point of taking us to the heavenly planets and the devotional service there. And if we commit some offense there by laughing at Asta, as Asta Vakra Muni or something, then there's some reaction. And the Nala Kuvera and Mani Griva, they committed an offense to Narada. They didn't do anything offensive. They were just running around in this totally disgusting fashion, offensive fashion. So in that sense, they committed an offense. And then, what was the reaction? Maybe to avoid Vishnu from getting involved, he actually took offense and did something. So the reaction was a mixed thing. They got a reaction which actually purified them of their sin, and at the same time gave them the chance to see Krishna like that.
That's interesting. There's several devotees that I've heard stories from how before they became devotees, they would hate devotees and do things bad to them. Like there was one devotee that he just disliked devotees so much when he would pass by the Harinam party, he'd throw beer bottles at them and heckle them. And he'd just do it on a regular basis, couldn't stand them. And then eventually he started joining the Harinam party and then he became a devotee.
Yeah, oh my God.
Isn't that interesting? I've heard several stories like that.
Madan's wife, she told us a story that the temple in Florida, I think it was there, maybe somebody knows the story, and some kids were coming in the morning and just spinning their wheels on the front lawn and just doing wheelies and throwing garbage out, everything else. So maybe it was Narahari, I don't know, the temple president called his friend from some friends. Well, he was from Detroit, so he called some devotees from Detroit. Where everybody has a gun and everybody is heavy. So the mother, Mataji said she was walking outside chanting her rounds in the morning after Mangal Arati, and these kids came by, and maybe four of them in the car, like from some party drunk, and he went right on the front lawn and just spun off, and they came off into the street. And then this devotee from Detroit just stepped right in front of the oncoming car, pulled his pistol out of his pocket, and started shooting point blank right into the windshield. Like that, and the car spun left, spun right, and just roared off in the opposite direction. And she was standing there watching this whole thing. And then he turned to her and said, "They won't be back." So she was thinking, "I won't be back," So anyway, that didn't come back, and his friend went back to Detroit. So, however you approach Krishna, you're not going to forget the experience. And somehow or other, like you say, boy, it can purify us. Yeah.
Hare Krishna, I just wanted to mention again, in the purport, or this is like Ramananda, if you look, it says in the purport, similarly, an offense unto the feet of a pure devotee murders one's position in devotional service on the part of the Lord. There was no offended mood because he does not accept any offense created by his sincere devotee. But a devotee should be very cautious of committing offenses at the feet of another devotee. So that, would be any devotee.
Yeah, to commit an offense against a devotee. Yeah. Again, we do something which you hit somebody, and because he's on a material platform, 50% of the agitation is just like a bodily reaction. But the other 50% is that we realize it is offensive because the person was actually, wasn't considerate, wasn't conscious. He was actually was a personal thing, you know, in that sense. So then we're offended by it. You know?
Prabhupada was quoted in saying that all of his disciples or all of his followers were pure devotees, and we know that verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Se Bhakta Gana Hoi Divita Pakar Parishad Gana Eka Sadhika Gana Ar. So of the devotees, Divita Pakar, that there's two divisions. Those who are Parishad, you know, the intimate devotees that are always with Krishna, and Sadhika Gana Ar, also those who are practicing sadhana bhakti, we would fall into that category. So,
two kinds, yeah.
Yeah, we keep
some
that in
pure,
mind.
Some are pure by practice. They have to use their intelligence, but they're pure. And the other ones are just spontaneously. Yeah. I remember one time also Prabhupada said there are first, second, and third class pure devotees. Then he said, but actually the third class are not really pure devotees. You know, the Madhya Madhika, yeah, he be a little careful. He can remain pure. Then also, too, there's also pure devotees in Mahavishnu Loka, Vaikuntha, Ayodhya, Dwarka, Mathura, Vrindavan. I mean, Mathura and Vrindavan also different levels of purity. So any final comments or anything else, questions here?
Another thing I think of in terms of pure devotee is that our string, our line, is designed, unlike other lines that may be more... with material motive, but our line is to become completely pure. Just kind of like there's different strains of mangoes.
Oh, yeah.
Some are not so sweet, some are very sweet. And if we're on that line of the really pure, sweet mango, you know, we're a scion of that. In the Bhagavad Gita, we see that term, O scion of Bharat. So a scion is very different from a seed. A seed, you know, comes, you know, can be, and when you plant a seed, that seed has been fertilized, you don't know exactly what it's. There's so many mixtures of different chromosomes in a seed, but a scion is going to be an exact replica, exactly like Dolly the sheep, or so in horticulture when we. If we want to make a mango tree, if we want a Hayden mango, for example, which is my favorite, if you take a Hayden seed and plant it, it's not going to be a pure Hayden because that's been cross-fertilized and so on. But if you take some budwood from that Hayden tree and you graft it onto some rootstock, it's going to be, those fruits, it's going to be exactly Hayden. So in that sense, we're pure in that we're in Prabhupada's, in the line of Lord Chaitanya, which is our goal is to give up absolutely everything and without any motive, just want to become pure devotees, unadulterated pure devotees of Krishna. So in that sense, our line is very pure.
Also to the, what do you have, the other ideas is that devotional service means to follow your varna ashram and enjoy the benefits, and that's service to God. What was that? That's the tattva bodies. Yeah, the Lord Chaitanya was criticizing on that basis like that. Okay. I guess we'll go here. It's past 12 o'clock.
Yeah,
somebody else?
Hare Krishna, yeah. One more comment. This is Mahesh. Now, one thing is that we have to distinguish between offenses and constructive criticism. I think the devotees have to really learn how to take constructive criticism properly, because without it, we are bound to make mistakes. If we don't have a critic that is going to show us that there is another point of view, then we are bound to make mistakes. There is this famous story about this saint who had a critic, and the critic would come and always criticize him. And his disciples were very upset that this critic would come and criticize their guru. And one day the critic passed away. So the disciple came to the guru and said, "Hey, your critic has finally passed away. Now let's celebrate." And the guru said, "Oh no, my critic has gone. What am I going to do now? He was my best friend." So, you know, we got to keep that in mind.
That's actually a story about in Europe. I think it was the 18th century. Yeah, exactly that story. One big atheist. He was an atheist. he was always criticizing one very semi person. When a semi person died, and his atheist started always started crying. He said, "Why are you crying?" He said, "Well, who will I have to criticize now?" Yes. However, we're attracted to Krishna. You know, it doesn't matter. Krishna doesn't care. I see so many times Prabhupada would just make people so angry. You know, you've seen that some of these things, like these people just, oh, they were just so furious at Prabhupada, you know? Yeah. Okay. They would go away chanting, Prabhupada, 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 Prabhupada. Okay, we'll go now. And so we'll see you all tomorrow. And tomorrow's edition of the telenovela, which never fails, the soap opera, which never stops.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Maharaj Haribol.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Haribol.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Haribol.